Thank you, Javier.
Okay, so the title of today's lecture is First-Order Methods for Optimization, Variational Inequality, and Saddle Point Problems. Today I will talk about algorithms for which the iterations are very cheap, but they tend to perform a lot of them. So as a result, they have very slow convergence, and they tend to only get very low accurate solutions. But for large-scale problems, sometimes that's all you can do. So you can try many first-order methods and see which one is the best for your problem. Okay? So the outline is, like, I'm not going to read all these, but I'm just going to say that there are four paths. The first path is about smooth convex optimization, where the objective function is assumed to be a smooth function. Second path is the path where I talk about non-smooth convex optimization. These first two paths are old material. I'm just presenting for completeness. And in the last two paths is the path that is more recent. The third path is about especially structured convex optimization, where the objective function has a special structure where you can take some advantage of that. And then the last part is about methods for variational inequalities and saddle point problems. So let's start with the first part, which is about smooth convex optimization. So suppose you are given a set X, which is assumed to be a very simple set, and we will say that a function f, a differentiable convex function f, has L Lipschitz continuous gradient if it satisfies this. This f prime means the gradient of f in this talk. If it satisfies this inequality here, the dual norm of this difference between the two gradients is bounded by L times the difference between the two points in the norm you choose. And the dual norm is defined like this for a general function. So to say that f satisfies this property, you simply say it like this. So we also use the notation that if you're given a point x, we let this denote the linear approximation to f at the point x. The linear approximation is defined like this. So it's based at the point x, and this is an affine transformation that minorizes the function f and touches the function f at the point x. And it is well known that the function belongs to this class if and only if f is always majorized by its linear approximation plus this quadratic term in here. This quadratic term is simple because its hashing is identity. So the methods we'll talk about consist of minimizing functions like these over the set x. So for that reason, you have to assume that x is simple enough so that you should be able to find optimal solutions of functions of this form in closed form over the set x. Should be able to minimize this function easily over the set x. Okay, so let me start with a very simple method. It's the projected gradient method. Everybody heard about it. So again, some f is in this problem class. F star denotes the optimal value for this problem, and x star denotes the set of optimal solutions. The projected gradient here, the projected gradient with fixed step size, we are given initial point in x, and you choose a constant greater than zero. So given xk, you find the next point by solving this, the function I just mentioned earlier. But here, the only difference is that we add this alpha here. And then you repeat this. Okay, so another way to express star is by saying that xk plus 1 is the projection of this point obtained by moving along the negative gradient with step size alpha divided by L, and then project onto the set x. This denotes projection onto the set x. And then you have the following rate of convergence for steepest for the projected gradient method. From now on, we refer to this as the kth gap. So it says that the kth gap is bounded by L, the Lipschitz, F has L Lipschitz continuous gradient, is bounded by L times the distance of x0 to x star square divided by k, and then this constant depending on the alpha. So In fact, you can prove that the kth gap divided by 1 over k goes to 0. So this, the kth gap converges to 0 faster than 1 over k. The question is whether we can improve this power of k here. And it turns out for the projective gradient, we don't know if it can improve, but there is another algorithm that improves this power. But before giving the next method that is due to Nesterov, let's give a lower complexity result. Okay? So you're going to show that Nesterov optimal method is the optimal method in this sense. Okay? So the result size like this. Suppose you fix index k between 1 and n minus 1 divided by 2, and you fix an initial point x0. So it says that there exists a quadratic function which is which has L Lipschitz continuous gradient with the property that any first order method that satisfies this is a very reasonable condition. It says that the kth point is obtained is always in this affine space determined by the initial point and all the gradients generated so far. Ling means the subspace generated by this gradient here. And we assume that for simplicity, I mean, this result is for the case where you have unconstrained, no constraint. So any first order method satisfies this inequality. You cannot reduce the kth gap more than this. K squared is the best you can do, okay? So to state Nesterov method, let me first introduce a piece of notation. That is, he uses Bregman distance. So the Bregman distance is defined like this. You specify a function h, which is a sigma strongly convex function, and that means it satisfies this inequality here, that in the sense that h is minimized by its linear approximation at any point x, plus a quadratic term like this, and sigma is called the strong convex parameter of h. Given h, you can define this Bregman distance in here, which is h subtracted from, you subtract from h its linear approximation. So in the case where h is the norm square over 2, then the Bregman distance reduces to the what we have been using so far in the projective gradient. Projective gradient is this, uses this, uses this term here. The Nesterov method replaces this by the Bregman distance. Okay, so now let me state Nesterov's optimal method. For that, assume that you have a sequence of positive scalars that satisfy these two conditions in here. And take tau k to be alpha k divided by the sum of the alpha i's. So, for example, you can take alpha k to be k plus 1 divided by 2, and tau k to be 2 divided by k plus 2. Sorry, in that case, tau k will be exactly 2 divided by k plus 2. So Nesterov's algorithm works like this. You start with an initial point in x, and you set u0 to be x0. And so at the kth iterate, you have all this past history here. All these points have already been generated, and you use them to compute the next points here. And you do it like this. First, you compute the optimal solution for this problem. This problem uses the Bregman distance with respect to h and aggregates all linear approximations at the points obtained so far. Okay, and then you get this vka, and then xk is obtained by taking a projective gradient step at the point uk minus 1. And now you take a convex combination of these two points to get the next point uk. And then you repeat this procedure. Now there is a variant due to Paul Saint where you can replace this projective gradient step by this formula here. You simply obtain xk by a convex combination between the previous xk minus 1 and the uka that is obtained at this step. So the advantage of the last variant is that you just have to solve one optimization problem, while in a set of method you have to solve two optimization methods. Okay, let me give the complexity of this result. We're going to see that this method is optimal. So the result says that the kth gap is bounded. I mean, for general sequence of alpha, I satisfying those properties is bounded by L times the distance of x star to x zero in the Bregman distance divided by sigma times the sum of the alpha i's. If you use alpha k to be k plus 1 divided by 2, this becomes like a term that behaves like 1 over k squared. So this is optimal. Now, this complexity result holds regardless of whether the set X is optimal, is bounded or not. The problem is that if the set is unbounded, you don't know how to stop, okay? So if the set is bounded, one way to stop is to estimate this right-hand side, because you can estimate the distance using the fact that the set X is bounded. And then whenever this is less than epsilon, you stop. But there is another way to stop is to develop a lower bound on F star. This is what this result gives. So suppose that X is bounded, and let theta k and vk be the optimal value and optimal solution of this problem here. This problem is essentially minimizing a linear function or an affine function over the set X. That's one of the reasons we have to assume that X is bounded. And also, if you examine the objective function is a convex combination of functions that minimize F. So the whole thing will minimize F. And therefore, the optimal value of this is going to be a lower bound on F star. Okay? So then this inequality here follows. The optimal value of this problem is a lower bound on F star, so this inequality, first inequality follows. But what is interesting is that this new gap is also bounded by a term that is similar to the one above, in which we replace X star by VK. Okay? And here you have something that is computable, and you can use it to stop the method. Whenever this is less than or equal to epsilon, you stop. Okay? So the lower bound helps in this sense. Now, in practice, the number of iterations of this method is proportional to the theoretical bound. So if the constant L is too large or X0 is too far from X star, then this method will tend to have slow convergence. So that's one of the drawbacks. Now, this is another variant that also solves one subproblem only, and have a very similar complexity. I will not spend too much time, except that the last two steps is exactly the same as in Paul Sain's variant. Just the first step that is changed. Here, if we look at the instead of method, let me save this one. I'm trying to learn something here. Oh yeah. So that's instead of method. Here he computes the UKA using the initial point and then taking the aggregation of all the UIs. So UKA gets all the grid information at once. Here, UKA gets the grid information little by little. That the problem is based at the previous point and uses just the most recent grid information. Okay, that's the only difference. Okay, so how you could use this problem to solve COM programming? So one way is like this. So here is the pair of dual COM programming, where we are assuming here that K is a closed convex cone and K star is the dual cone, defined in this manner. So assuming that there is no duality gap between the problems, you could formulate them equivalently as solving this problem here. So you can easily see that, looking at the objective function of this problem, you see that this objective function is always non-negative because we are taking square of everything. And also, if you pick a primal dual optimal solution of this problem, it will make the objective function zero. And this function, this, so the optimal value of this problem is zero. And the set of optimal solutions is exactly the set of primal dual optimal solutions of the home programming problem. Okay? So alternatively, you could solve this other formulation here. You move this into the constraint, and the objective function will go to the constraint. And let me explain the notation here. DKF means the distance of x to the cone K. And since you are squaring, you can show that this function is going to be a function which has Lipschitz continuous gradient, and the Lipschitz constant is exactly equal to 2. And this problem tends to have a better complexity than the first one, because the A will not show up in the complexity, and it tends to perform in practice less number of iterations than the previous one. One drawback of it is that you have to project over this manifold, but as long as the A star is sparse, this projection can be easily done. I mean, not easily done, it can be done in a cheap way. Okay, so the first formulation is due to Lai and Lu and myself, and then the second one is due to Yah and Bendel. Okay, so let me talk about the possible extension of what we have talked about so far. I know that I've been talking just about smooth functions on this path, but there is this method can be naturally extended to the following class of functions, where f of x can be written as a smooth part and a non-smooth part, where this is has Lipschitz continuous gradient, and fn is just assumed to be a closed convex function. So what I want to say is that there exist extensions of Nesterov method and its variant, which instead of using the linear approximations on the subproblems, for example, this linear approximation here and here, you replace those linear approximations. Instead of using this linear approximation, you approximate f of x by this. You just take the linear approximation of f of x and leave fn intact. And so the disadvantage of that is that the subproblems get more complicated. Now you have subproblems in which fn is present. But there are some applications in which this problem can be easily solved. One example, which appears in compressed sensing, you have to minimize a function of this form. This is the smooth part, and this is the non-smooth part. This is the one norm of x, that means the sum of the absolute value of the components of x. This is a non-smooth function. And if you use the Bregman distance with respect to this h, the Euclidean norms square over 2, then it has been shown that problems of this form admits a closed form solution. It can be cheaply computed, okay? So sometimes you can take advantage of this part. Okay. Now let me go to the second part of the talk, which, what time did you finish? I forgot.
420,
I have to monitor myself. 420. Okay, so again, we have the same kind of problem, and except that we are assuming now that f is just convex function. So let me start with the lower complexity result, which is the following. Suppose that x is the whole Rn, and suppose you're given an x here in Rn and two positive constants. Let's consider the class of functions f that I denoted like this, for which this problem here with x equal to Rn will have an optimal solution whose distance to the initial point is bounded above by R. Okay, and assume also that f is M Lipschitz continuous on the closed ball, this closed ball. So you have the following lower complexity bound for this class of problems. Fix a k less than or equal to n minus 1, then you can always find a function in this class with the property that any algorithm which generates xk, again, this is the same condition we talked about earlier, except that instead of using gradients, we have to use subgradients of f. So this is the notation for the subdifferential of f at the point xi. And such any algorithm, you can find a function that for any algorithm you give that with this property, the case gap will be minorized by a term like this. So you cannot do better than 1 over square root of k. That's what this lower complexity result is saying. And the question is there an optimal method? It turns out that the answer to this question is has been answered a long time ago. Yes, and that's the subgradient method, which is the following method. You start with an initial point, and you say select alpha k greater than 0, and a subgradient at the point xk, and then you move by first normalizing. You move along the negative gradient by first normalizing it and then multiplying by alpha k, and then project everything to get the point at k plus 1. So you have the following complexity for this simple method. Suppose that f is m Lipschitz continuous on x. So I'm not assuming that the gradient of f is m Lipschitz continuous. I'm assuming that the function is m Lipschitz continuous. Okay? Then for all k and x star an optimal solution, you have that the minimum of all gaps obtained so far is bounded by this Lipschitz constant times this term in here. Okay, so as a corollary, assume that the possibility that you choose all the alpha k's uniformly, they are all the same up to a certain iteration. So let's fix a certain iteration capital K here. So suppose you know an upper bound on the distance of x0 to x star. For example, you would know that if you know that the set x, capital X, is bounded. Okay? So then I would just be the diameter of the set. Then you can set, say you set alpha k uniformly. That means they are all equal from 0 up to capital K. Then you this term simplifies and becomes like this. And this is exactly on the same order of magnitude as the lower complexity result. As you can compare, that's the lower complexity bound, and this is the result obtained by the method. Okay, so now let's go to the new part that's more recent stuff developing more recently in the last 10 years, or in the last 9 years, even less than that. Okay, so we now are going to consider the same problem, except that we assume that f of x has a special structure. F of x is a smooth function that has Lipschitz continuous gradient. We denote by L phi the Lipschitz constant. And it has a smooth part, that is a special structure. It consists of a bilinear part, and the negative of a convex function here. And you assume that the set you are maximizing here is a compact convex set. So the dual of this problem is obtained by interchanging the max and the mean. And so the dual has a very similar structure. The dual has is the problem of maximizing a function f tilde, which has a very similar structure to the one you started with. In fact, if you multiply this function by minus 1, you obtain a function with the same structure as that. So the problem of the dual is very symmetric. And of course, you have duality gap, that the f of x is always above this whenever you have feasible points. Okay, so as I mentioned, this is a non-smooth function. This part here is non-smooth, but the idea of Nesterov is that you can approximate this function very well by the following trick. You add to the max here a term like this, which consists of the following. It's a positive scalar, and h mu is a positive scalar, is the approximation parameter, and h tilde is an arbitrary sigma tilde strongly convex function, such that its minimum over the set x tilde is 0. So you can prove the following about this new function f mu. It can be viewed as a perturbation of the original function f. You can prove that, first thing, this problem here, we have a unique optimal solution that I denote like x tilde mu of x. And the gradient of this function is computed by evaluating the adjoint of C to this optimal solution. And the second thing, it says that this function is L mu Lipschitz continuous, where the Lipschitz constant is L phi plus the square of the norm of C divided by mu sigma tilde. And the third statement says, how good is the approximation? First of all, F mu lies below F, and if you add mu d tilde to F mu, you obtain something above F, where d tilde is the maximum of H over the set X tilde. So you can see that as you make mu small, the approximation becomes better and better because of the third statement. But due to the second statement, the Lipschitz constant gets worse because it's inversely proportional to mu. So there is a trade-off. If you try to make mu too small, the approximation gets better, but the Lipschitz constant gets worse, and that this makes the problem hard. Okay, so the goal is how to choose the question is how to choose this mu so that you balance these two things. Okay, so then Mr. Love proposed the following approximation scheme. You set mu equal to epsilon divided by 2d tilde. And then you apply Mr. Love's method to the approximation because the approximation is smooth. So you can apply the Mr. Love's optimal method directly to the approximation. Okay? Until you obtain the termination criteria. And this is the step size you should use for Mr. Love's optimal method. So here's the result we can prove for this approximation. Suppose you choose, this is the result you can prove for this approximation scheme. Suppose you choose, you know a D that is an upper bound on this distance from X star to X zero. For example, if the set X is bounded, you know that. Then the above scheme, we generate a sequence that satisfies this inequality here. Okay, let me explain this. This first term is due to the error of the approximation. Okay? The second term is due to the error this is exactly the complexity, the rate of convergence of the optimal method applied to the function f mu. Because this is the Lipschitz constant for f mu. And so this is exactly the complexity for Nesterov's optimal method applied to the function f mu. Okay, so this error comes from trying to approximate the optimal FF mu. Okay, now if you replace the value of mu into this formula, you will get this one. And now the aim is to bring the gap less than or equal to epsilon. So epsilon over 2 is already used here because of the choice of mu. You chose mu to be epsilon divided by 2d. And so what you have to do is to choose k so that this is less than or equal to epsilon. And this is the number of iterations that it takes to do that, which is on the order of 1 over epsilon. So this complexity is the one associated with a method that behaves like 1 over k. So this method lies somewhere in between the subgradient method and the Nesterov's optimal method. This method behaves like 1 over k, okay? While the previous two methods behave like 1 over square root of k and 1 over k square. So this lies somewhere in between. Now, it's also possible to develop a lower bound on F star so that you can use it to stop the method. Some F star is not known, so you cannot stop using the left-hand side in here. So you can construct a lower bound, and this is the result that says that. So assume that X is bounded, and now that you know V, which is an upper bound on this quantity here. Then, if we construct this point xk tilde, I don't have it in that, this xk tilde is obtained as a convex combination of these optimal solutions, which are optimal solutions of this inside for this maximization problem here. You have to compare it anyway in order to evaluate the gradient. Then you can prove that this primal dual gap, this is the dual function, is bounded by this star, okay? And this is computable, as long as the primal function, the dual function, can be easily evaluated. Okay. Now, let me make an observation again. This method has the same drawback as before. If the set is unbounded, you don't know when this occurs. This is a drawback of this method, okay? So you can only verify this if you know F star, or if you or if x is bounded, then you construct a lower bound on f star to be able to stop. Okay, the other observation I want to make, I think I will stop, I will skip this one because I don't have much time. Sorry. Let me go to the last material. I have like 15 minutes. So let's skip that observation and go to the last part of my talk, which is about algorithms about for variational inequality and saddle point problems. So let me review the variational inequality problem. Variational inequality problem is like this. You are given a set X which is no-empty and closed convex, and a function F defined on X which is continuous and monotone. So the monotone variational inequality problem is consists of finding an X star which lies in the set and satisfy this criterion here. You want the inner product of X minus X star with F of X to be no-negative for every point in X. So this is related with the optimality conditions for convex programming, as we're going to see soon. So another way to express these is like that, where you replace X by X star. For the monotone case, the two conditions are equivalent. So we also assume that the set of optimal solutions of the VI is no-empty, and that F has L elliptic continuous gradient, okay, in this same thing here. Now, how does variational inequality relate to optimization problems? Suppose you have an optimization problem like this, then you can easily see it by looking at the optimality conditions of this problem, that this problem is equivalent to the variational inequality where capital F is exactly the gradient of F. And then this assumption here is simply saying that F have L Lipschitz continuous gradient. So variational inequality can be viewed as a generalization of convex programming. Okay. Now, let me now talk a little bit about the saddle point. What is the saddle point? Suppose you're given a function phi, defined in a Cartesian product U of U and V, and assume that if you fix the second argument, the function is convex in terms of the first argument. And if you fix the first argument, then the function is concave in terms of the second argument. Okay? That's the definition of a saddle point. So the saddle point problem then consists of finding a pair U star V star in this set such that the following holds. You have two inequalities here. The first inequality says that V star maximizes this function. And the second inequality says that U star minimizes this function with respect to U. Okay? And using this fact, we can easily see that the saddle point problem is equivalent to the variational inequality where F consists of two components. The first component is the gradient of phi with respect to the first variable U. The first variable U. What is the first variable here? And then the second part is composed of the negative of the gradient of phi with respect to the second variable v. Okay? The two things are equivalent. There is also an optimization point of view for saddle points, which is the following. Consider the pair of dual problems. Okay, the primal is the problem of minimizing this primal function here, which is obtained by maximizing the function phi u of v over v with u fixed. And the dual problem is obtained by maximizing this dual function, which is defined to be the minimum of phi with respect to u, where v is fixed. Okay? You can easily see that weak duality holds. Phi d of v is less than or equal to this value, phi evaluated uv, which is less than or equal to phi p of u. And hence, it immediately follows that the optimal values of these two problems are satisfied these. In fact, you can show that this point is a saddle point, that means to satisfy these, if and only if phi d of v star is equal to phi p of u star, and in this case the two optimal values are the same, and they are both equal to this value of phi at the point the pair U star V star. Okay, now let me talk about algorithms for variational inequality. So again, assume that H is a sigma strongly convex function, and you have the dH is the associated Bregman distance defined here. The Prox-Miller method is the following. You start with an initial point x theta, and then you obtain the point yk is optimal solution of this problem, which again, we have to assume x is simple so that we can easily compute this. This is the same type of optimizations, the subproblems we have seen before. So having yk, now we solve this other problem to obtain xk. And then you repeat this. So this problem, if you specialize for the case when h is the norm square over 2, is an old method due to Kopalevich's, which takes this form. You can describe now these in terms of projection over the set X, and this one in terms of this projection here, with the square lambda is this step size over here. Okay? In this form, I believe this method, Prox-Miller, was proposed by Nemirovsky, but I'm not sure. I think it is due to him. Okay. But I can say for sure that he's the one that first established the complexity for this method. Let me give the result that Nemirovsky established for this method. It says the following. If X is bounded, and this is important for his method, you have to assume that X is bounded, then let me go back to a previous transparency. I want to freeze in here. Okay. So he uses these criteria over here. We saw two characterizations of a solution. So as it is, they are equivalent. But if you relax them, they are no longer equivalent. Okay. So he considered the first criterion there, the first minimum. And then he shows that that quantity, that minimum, is always bounded below by something that goes to zero, converges to zero. It depends on Lipschitz constant L times this quantity dH of x0, which is defined here, divided by k times sigma. Sigma is the strong convex parameter of h, which defines the Bregman distance. And the yk bar is the ergodic means of all the points yi obtained in his method. Okay? Now, how would you stop this method? You would stop this method usually it's very hard to compute this quantity, because this is to evaluate this minimum is non-convex. This what you see here is a non-convex function. Evaluating this minimum is hard. So we have to stop this method by using the right-hand side. Because assuming that X is bounded, then this quantity here is bounded. And then you can estimate this quantity, and then work with the estimation instead of this quantity here. Okay, so there is an alternative result developed by myself and Schweitzer more recently, which considers the case where H is the norm squared divided by 2. And then what you prove is the following. We prove that the method itself generates a pair, a computable pair. The method, you can compute a sequence of pairs like this. This is in Rn, and this is a non-negative scalar, such that this quantity, which is bounded below by this minus epsilon k bar. Now, let me look at this quantity more carefully. This quantity is the previous one where we perturb F a little bit. This is saying that you are solving a perturbed problem to epsilon k bar optimality. Okay? And these two quantities here can be estimated by these theoretical bounds in here that you probably don't know how to compute because they both depend on H star. But this doesn't matter from the computational point of view. What's important is that these quantities are computed, they are given by the algorithm for free. Okay? And this, as you're going to see, this is an important point when you talk about saddle points in the next transparency. Okay. When F is a prime, in fact, we can establish, we can work with the other criterion, which is stronger, and establish that you have this bounding here. Now, let me interpret this criterion here when X is a cone. If X is a cone, what this criterion says is the following. It says that this criterion is equivalent to say that F of YK bar minus RK, the residual, belongs to the dual cone, and that this vector here, together with the YK bar, almost satisfy complementarity gap. Okay? So for YK bar to be an exact solution, you would have to have zero here, and you would have to have zero here. Then you would get the right solution of the problem. Okay? So what this is saying is that the RK measures exactly how much this is missing to be in the cone, in the dual cone, and this says that how much you're missing to have the complementarity gap equals zero. So this, working with these two measures, RK bar and epsilon K bar, is a natural thing to do. Okay, so the other complex results that I want to talk about is for saddle point problems. And this is my last transparency. Okay, so consider now, you apply the same methods that we talked about to the saddle point given like this. You have the saddle point function, so you can construct F in this manner, and the set X is going to be taken to be the Cartesian product of U with B. So the saddle point problem we have seen is equivalent to this variational inequality here, with F given this way and X this way. Now, let YK bar denote the ergodic sequence denoted by the Prats-Miller method. And let's write YK bar, because YK bar is in this Cartesian product, you can write it like this. So we can, Nemirovsky proved the following fact. Suppose that U and V is bounded, then he proved that the prime of function minus the dual function is bounded above by this term in here. He's showing that the prime of dual gap behaves like 1 over K. Okay? But to get this result, he strongly uses the fact that U and V is bounded. So what myself and Spicer prove is for the case when H is norm squared divided by 2, then we prove that there exists, again, that computable pair. That there exists a computable RK bar that I can write like this, and because it lies in a Cartesian product where U and V lies. And there exists an epsilon K bar such that the perturbed problem, this is the saddle point, slightly perturbed by two linear functions, that these are small terms. The RKU and RKV can both be bounded like this. They both can be bounded by 1 over K. And the primal function and the dual function corresponding to this new saddle point function will satisfy this. They can be bounded by epsilon k bar, which in turn is bounded by this theoretical bound. We cannot compute this. Okay? So the point I'm trying to make is that you can run this method even if you don't know how to evaluate these two functions. Okay. That's a crucial point. While in Nesterov's method, in order to be able to stop, you have to evaluate these two functions. Here, you don't have to evaluate. You can just evaluate this guy and this guy. Okay? So, let me see. Yes. So, this is it. Finish this on time. Thank you. What is that? I don't know. I really don't know why he came up with this name. I think this method is due to Arkady. Is that correct?
I think so too.
Yeah.
He
what?
Mirror.
Oh, yeah? I don't know. I'm going to ask him about that later. I don't know.
So I have a question about the other confusing part, which is where the soft smooth method came from, right? So you presented two variants of the same method, which simplified and got rid of one of the optimizations, and then Auslander and Taboo, which looks like a much more classical sort of Fox method, right? And both of those have the same complexity.
Yes.
And they're both much simpler. And they both came, or the analysis at least came after Nesterov.
Yeah.
Nesterov has this complicated complex combination of previous ones. Now, you've done stuff on that. I mean, do you understand where Nesterov's combinations and so forth come from?
You mean the intuition behind his method? I mean, people have asked him this question. I know that Claude has been working on trying to understand the intuition behind his method. And I asked Nesterov about this, the same question. And Nesterov doesn't know how to answer. I think either he doesn't want to answer that, or he doesn't know how to answer this question. Okay, so I don't know what is the intuition behind this method.
I mean, this
method also admits Nesterov also has a version of this method in which this base point here is the initial point, and he accumulates all the gradients. So, and you can prove the same complexity as this method. So, there are two different ways of thinking. One is to accumulate all the gradient information at once to the and choose the base as the initial point, and the other is to always use the previous point and then the most recent gradient to update. These are two natural things to do. I think Nesterov called the other one as a dual method. I don't know why he calls. I asked him also why he calls that a dual method, but I don't know. I was not very convinced by his answer.
Basically, all of them seem to have essentially the same kind of complexity we solve at the end of the day, right?
Yes.
For smooth problems, we have one over k squared, and for structured non-smooth problems, we get one over k. So, in your experience, is there any advantage of one of those methods versus another in terms of, I don't know, like performance, like computational, like numerical performance, or things like that? You have
to
play around with many of them.
I mean, it's hard to say. Maybe the only computational experience that I had was with randomly generated STPs based on that formulation that I mentioned at the very beginning here. And I found, what is it? This one. Mm-hmm. This one here. And I found that the Nesterov's optimal method works better. Whenever you have smoothness, it's better to use Nesterov's optimal method. But you can also develop another formulation where you don't, instead of working with the Euclidean norm square, you just work with a norm, dot square, just take the norm. And then it becomes a non-smooth function. Then you can apply the other methods, like the smooth approximation scheme, or you can apply Nesterov's method. I found that the smooth one works better, but this is just for, okay, what I found is that the smooth, the Nesterov's optimal method works better, followed by the smooth approximation method, then followed by the Nemirovsky methods. But this is a computational experience based only, very limited computational experience, based only on this formulation. For solving STP, and even then, randomly generated STPs. So I cannot claim that this is going to be a general experience for every problem.
Okay. Well, thanks, Ken.
Thank you.